step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Welcome back to Freight Waves Insiders. I'm Dooner, and today joining me, weighing in at 199 pounds, it's none other than owner-operator Wayne Cragg. He's on a bike tour right now, and he's actually in a hotel room. I believe he's finally got out of Michigan, sitting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I don't know. Let's jump over to him. Wayne, where are you in the world right now on this bike tour?
I'm actually in Duluth, Minnesota, up near Lake Superior. I can actually see it, and I got out of Michigan. You and I talked on What the Truck not too long ago, and it was a long time in Michigan. Got out, went 150 miles through Wisconsin, and made it into Minnesota yesterday.
I got to tell you, it really shows. Not that you were like a big guy beforehand, but you've clearly lost some weight. It's like when you see people on the beginning of Survivor, then like 39 days later at the end, they shed like 35 pounds, and you're kind of looking like that, and that's why we brought up your weight right at the beginning. There's a reason you're doing this Highway to Health tour, though. You've been an owner-operator for years now, a journey that you've chronicled online. People may follow you on social media. It's kind of a sub-career for you, maybe taking some more prominence. We'll get into all of that. But let's start at what you're doing right now. Why the bike tour?
Yeah, it was important for me about 3 months ago. I was at the Boise VA. I've got a pretty large lump. It's still here on my neck. And I was finally got out of the truck to get it taken a look at to make sure it wasn't cancerous, and it wasn't. And when I got in there, I ended up spending 3 weeks in Boise, not in the hospital, but testing me because my blood pressure was like 202 over 110. And it was like that every time I went back. So they were worried. I was worried. And because of all the social media I did too, Now nobody else knew what was going on, but I took myself out of the truck because I'm sure you know that you can't. I would have been sidelined if the DOT knew that I had numbers like that. They would have sidelined me. I sidelined myself. So I needed to get healthier. And I was thinking, what haven't I done yet? And I said, let's do a bike tour. And that's how I got started on it, to get healthier, lose the weight, as you mentioned. And my blood pressure is down. My pulse is down. Everything is going in the right direction.
Well, hey, little congratulations for that. Glad you're taking care of yourself. For those of you who aren't familiar, you haven't met Wayne before. He has been a longtime contributor to the shows that I produce at Freight Waves. He's been on What the Truck a number of times. When we had the Sirius XM Road Dog Trucking Show, he was on at least twice a month as my eyes and ears on the road. And Wayne, let's start there. It's kind of surprising to me that you finally got out of the cab, because when I talked to you last year, pandemic, everyone off the roads, you were still running hard. I did notice on social media near the end of the year, you were taking a little bit more time off. You reconnected with your son. But then this medical thing, was that in the plans, or that just kind of came up on you and you're like, you know what? I got to pivot. I got to care about myself.
Yeah, I really did. Because, you know, when we talked, I spent during the beginning of the pandemic, before I took off on January 1st, and then the pandemic hit and I was going to see my son and his wife and everybody's canceled flights. And I stayed in the truck for 7 months and 2 weeks. That was a record for me. And then, as you mentioned, I started to take a little bit more time off. The lump on my neck was getting worse the whole time. So, you know, I really just decided that, okay, I've got to take care of this. I got to take care of myself. And I had a great lady friend that was letting me stay with her in Boise to do it, because that's always a trucker's issue. Is I live in the truck. I don't have the truck now. What am I going to do? So I went, that's when I went to the VA to get the lump checked out. And then all of a sudden, it didn't surprise me though, Dooner. It didn't surprise me, because I was not taking care of myself like I was earlier in 2019 and 18.
Now, Wayne, when you say lady friend, like that kind of lady friend?
No, we were trying and it didn't work out. And she was single. I was single for a long time. I've been single for 15 years now, but I can't thank her enough for doing that, because it really, me getting out of that truck and having a place to stay for, you know, a month and a half, that was a huge deal to be able to let me take care of myself. And I had to. I knew I was getting unhealthy, but I didn't know how bad. Those numbers on the blood pressure are through the roof. Stroke. Oh, my cholesterol was over 300 as well. So
there's two sides to health. There's the physical health. There's the mental health. You mentioned you've been single for 15 years. You had to take time off to see your son. Before we go back in time and talk about how you get into trucking, let's talk about that first. Let's talk about being a driver, being behind the wheel, and maintaining relationships. Is it tough? Does it weigh on you? Tell me about that.
Absolutely. And I say when I'm single for 15 years, don't get me wrong. I've had girlfriends along the way, but trucking and me spending so much time in the truck is absolutely 100% the reason why the relationships can't keep going forward. I've always been someone who goes out on the road for 2 or 3 months, 2 months usually. For 2 years, I did 2 months on the road, took a 2 week vacation. And I do this 4 times a year. To me, how many people can take 4 quality 2 weeks vacation, but I'm out for 2 months, but you're not seeing that significant other for 2 months. And it never seemed to be able to work whatever relationship I was in. So that's kind of where, when I say single, you know, getting divorced, I've had girlfriends, but in trucking, and it's not talked about enough, a lot of divorce is very high among truckers. And especially if you're a truck driver that want to make money and stay in the cab, it is tough on everyone. Me, the relationship I'm trying, the significant other. And it's not just me. It's every truck driver goes through this problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to another very heavily logistics field, the military, where you're away for long times. You're off base, your base being your house or your base in the military. Now, I'm not equating the two identically, and we'll get into that when you talk about your time in the Navy. But there are some similarities and some parallels there, I imagine. And in both professions, always some trouble maintaining relationships because of the nature of the beast that job is. The other thing you mentioned was the pandemic. You drove through it. And I remember that on Sirius XM during the beginning of the pandemic, you're like, look, it's awful. There's a pandemic, but it's great because there's nobody on the road. It's that slowly changed. Cars came back and something happened. Like, behavior changed. People became crazier when they got back on the road. You know, the more road rage incidents, more accidents. And you know what's funny, too? In 2020, you'd think with less traffic, there would have been less accidents, but they were up from 2019 because people were driving like maniacs. They were driving way too fast. How is it driving a truck? And also, how is it riding a bike right now? That could be pretty dangerous on some of these routes you're taking. People crazy out there?
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this on Sirius XM, and I said that people were speeding crazy before they came out with pandemic speeding. And I just noticed when there was less traffic, everyone just kind of felt like, and it was true, like it was a Wild West again. This is something I'll never forget, that, you know, there were no cops pulling anybody over, and people knew that. And it's tough out there mentally. You know, when people started to get back into their, this is a saying that I felt since the day I hopped in the truck, that your car, your truck, your van is an extension of you as a person, as a personality. Like, you know, when you remember when you're young, a teenager, and you get in a fight with your girlfriend and you squeal the tires out and you take off. This is what everyone was dealing with once you're getting back into the pandemic. Fine, we were able to get into our cars and trucks and move around more, but we brought our personalities with us. And that's pretty, the personality side of it was everyone was cooped up. Some were angry, but yes, driving to go back to the bike, Michigan, I've said this too. This is not going to blow anybody in Michigan knows. My license is in Michigan, grew up in, they are the maddest drivers in all the 48 states. Easy by far. That was a hard 600 miles. Had a couple of people do the roll call with me, you know, in the back. And I was on the sidewalk on one of them. I wasn't even in his way. And they had a blast with me rolling their coal, blowing their diesel at me. But once I got out of Michigan, it's been better. Even with a smaller shoulder in Wisconsin, they've been very respectful moving over. And I really haven't come into any type of really road rage with my bike, except for a certain few parts in Michigan with drivers yelling at me. But for the most part, it's been pretty good compared to when I was driving a truck.
What a dumbass. Like, what's going through the guy's head? He's pissed off that you're like offsetting carbon emissions or just out riding a bike. So he's like, I got to throw more carbon in the air.
Well, talk about
people are whack.
Talk about TikTok, too, because that's my biggest social media page. That got over, I think it was 30 some thousand views, I think it was. And I did that right after they did that. I did a TikTok on it and everybody was chiming in, including the people that were mad. I'm like, I'm riding a bike. I'm trying to get healthy. I'm trying to get my blood pressure better. I'm not, like you said, I have zero emissions going on. Well, you know, well, it's I'll leave that alone. I was going to go with a joke on that one. But, you know, really, I'm just trying to get across and get my health there are some people out there that just don't like bicyclists, but it's been, for the most part, 90, 95%. It's been great. Absolutely wonderful.
You know, this episode is called Demystifying Trucking, and there's a reason. I mean, even just a few hours ago, I put out on Twitter, do you have any questions for truckers? And there's like 20, 30 responses from people. People are super curious about this profession. So to get an idea on your lens of the world, something we do on the show is we go back in time first. So we're 16-year-old Wayne Craig right now, right? You're thinking about, what the hell am I going to do with my life? I know when I was 16, my parents were like, here's these college books. Because back then, I mean, there was the internet, but the internet wasn't as developed in the mid-90s. So they would hand you these, I forget exactly who made the college, but they were college books. And you'd look through them and you'd be like, which ones do you want to go to? Which ones do you want to tour? What do you want to do with your life? And me, I'm 16. I'm like, I want to be a rock star. I don't have to go to school for that. I think you might have had a similar idea when you were 16.
I did. I played in a band for 6 years, all through high school. We played in our high school. And we actually, when we got done with high school, we were playing. We were a pretty good band called Southampton Dock. I played the drums. Didn't do a lot of singing until later on. So I wanted to be a rock star. But I actually specialized when I was my junior and senior year. I went to what's called a skill center. First year, it was half COBOL programming, half accounting. And then your senior year, you pick it up and you can go total COBOL programming or accounting. I went COBOL programming, and that just didn't, trying to play the drums and a rock star and doing COBOL programming, that just didn't mesh. So when I got out of high school, I'm like only 2 credits away from my associates, and the music just kept drawing me in. Music just kept going, let's try it. And we never did make it big, and I ended up getting into the Navy a little bit after that. But oh, rock star, I still want to be a rock star.
So let's talk about this. So rock star, you know, rebellion, Navy, order, right? Following orders. What made Wayne decide to go join the Navy? You know, you're probably still a teenager at the time, right? 18, 19 years old. What sent you over there?
Nope. I was actually on my 23rd birthday. So I 23. Got out. I played till I was 20, 21, and then it didn't work out. I moved down to Indiana, Elkhart, Indiana, and was administrative assistant for this waterbed sheet and comfort place, and I needed more structure. I didn't, and when I got out of school, I didn't go back for my associates, and I never really liked school all that much. And I just said, I need a little bit more structure in my life, or I'm really just going to be a 28-year-old that has nothing. And that's, I just, on a whim, I went over there and I was deciding between the Air Force and the Navy. And the Navy said, you can travel. And as you know, I love to travel. And so I did it on my 23rd birthday at the MEP station in Indianapolis. I was waving my hand up saying, I'll do it. I'll do 4 years, which I did.
So how was it? What was your takeaway from the experience? Did you get that order? Did you get that structure? Even if you didn't recognize it right away?
The best thing I ever did, because I wasn't 18 or 19 and they were getting strict with the drinking. About that time. And, you know, I was old enough, so they didn't have to babysit me. And I got that a lot. And I also wasn't too old at 23. You know, that's not, it was like almost the perfect age, because I meant to ship out at Westpac. I went to Australia. I went to Hong Kong. And the chief at the time would say, I don't have to worry about, you know, he didn't want me, obviously, he wanted me to get back onto the ship. And I could tell you a very good story about how I almost went AWOL. And in Australia, because I was 23 and had a few too many drinks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'll tell you real quick here. So we were in Australia in Perth. We spent 6 days there. We were more than anchored out, because in Australia, you can't bring the nuclear powered ship and dock it. So we had to take ferries. And the last day we were there, me and a group had met some ladies. And I had just gotten, you know, a little too toasted the night before. Well, the last ferry left at 5 p.m. the next day. Well, I had, I guess, passed out, and the lady friend I was with the night before came in at 3 p.m. The owner of the motel let her in. She's like, Wayne, you're going to miss the last ferry. I'm an hour away from Fremantle. And I'm like, I you can't miss it, because if you miss the ship, they send you to the next stop, which was the Philippines. And you're not, you know, you're gone the whole time. So you're UA for 30 days, not just the day you missed. So I called up the cab place. I said, I need a ride. He said, I'm full. I said, do you have a trunk? I'll pay you $100. Get me in your trunk. And he says, are you being serious? I said, I can't miss ship movement. So he showed up. I gave him $100 and I was in the trunk with about 7 other Navy sailors in the cab, and I made it.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, here's the rock star rebel in you, right? So, I mean, it still existed, but then you get out of the Navy, right? You end up in hospitality. And I remember when I first heard about you, it was in a Freight Waves article. I can't remember who wrote it, but you talked in there about, and I thought it was a really neat article, because you talked about what you learned from hospitality and how that served you as an owner operator. So we don't have to you know, we'll go past the hospitality bit that you get into, but just give me just a little bit on that.
No, absolutely. Really quick. I spent 12 years on the line at Chrysler when I was married, had my son. So I do have a retirement plan through Chrysler. When we got divorced, I got into hospitality management in Yellowstone, spent a year there, and then director of housekeeping operations. I just kept moving up and up. So very short and condensed. I spent 7 years director of housekeeping, executive housekeeping operations at the number one place to get married in the United States. So that taught me so much going into, you know, being an owner operator, being responsible, knowing budgets and stuff like that. It truly, truly helped me a lot.
What made you get into trucking? Did you see Over the Top in 1987 at a theater near you say, "Hey man, Lincoln Hawk, Sly, he looks awesome. He better," because he was like the last trucking hero I think there's ever been in a movie. But what lured you into that? I mean, it's kind of a rock star job in a way.
It is. And I'll be honest with you again here too, because for a long time I didn't talk a lot about it, but the last place I was at on San Juan Island, I had a big falling out with the person that I worked with. Imagine that. You've seen me on LinkedIn. I can be opinionated. And we were really turning things around. And after 2 years of just, I loved it. This is a place I wanted to be. We got into I've said this on my photography page on Facebook. It's all out there. But we had a big falling out. And when I gave my resignation letter, the human resource guy said, "That's probably the best letter I've ever read. I laughed a bunch of times, but you're never going to work in this industry again." It was really a contested, like, I don't like this guy. So my best friend from the Navy on the USS Carl Vinson was a director of the C-1 school in Springfield, Missouri. And we're still in touch. And he said, now he works for Transport America. And he said, "Wayne, I think trucking would be great for you. You can work on your own. You've managed other people. You'd be great at it. You could work on your photography as well." So he was the one who paid for my ticket to stay with him and go to school.
Wow, he's like pissed off, hot-headed guy. Hey, jump in the cab over here. We know a career for you. You did something really interesting, though, and this is a little bit before, I think, you know, every trucker and their mother started, you know, being on TikTok and chronicling their journeys on social media. You started this early on, about how many years ago now? You started chronicling your journeys right from your onset at CDL school.
Yeah, so it worked out really great, and I've talked about him before, but Derek McLean is one of the best digital marketers in Indianapolis, and he works, and he still does, for Driver Solutions. I went to the C1 school. Driver Solutions owns the C1 schools, so he saw some of my photography. I didn't know who he was. Rich, my Navy buddy, who was a director, said, "We got to get you two together." They work together, obviously, and so we did. So I started, literally, my career in social media started the day I walked onto the school there, and it's been going ever since. We did Trucker Wayne, and I worked with Driver Solutions as a paid partner for 6 years, and we just kept pushing out content. Hundreds of videos on YouTube about how to become a better trucker. About 2.5 years ago, I just kind of went out on my own, wanted to do a little bit more opinion pieces, as you've seen. So a lot of people see me on LinkedIn right now. A lot of people see me on Facebook and say, "What is this dude?" I put 6 years out of content of how to be a better truck driver. It's still out there. You run out of ideas. You know, you talk. I was doing 4 or 5 videos every week for 6 years. That's a lot of content.
That is a lot of content. And do you always take things to the extreme like that? Do you just go all in? And the problem with that, because I do that a lot too, is it can burn you out a little bit, right? There's a certain point where you go, there's just a switch that goes off in your brain, and suddenly, like, you don't love, actually you start dreading it. And I'm always afraid of that too. I'm like, please get, like, I'm like, don't come into my life. Don't make me not like what I'm doing now. But you know, that specter can always be there.
It's a huge flaw, man. Probably the biggest flaw, 54 years old. That is my biggest flaw. And my mom found my kindergarten thing where the teacher wrote, "Wayne just has too much passion sometimes." This is a huge flaw that I have that I can't seem to slow. I've been getting better. Even my son noticed the last 3 years. I do want to say this. So I had a CEO that I did a tour with, Dave Abels. He called me up one time when he saw I was getting, you know, pretty irritated. And I have people like that, people I've worked with before. He says, are you okay? You know, this was during the pandemic. Dude, you seem a little angry. Your stuff is really, really good. And this goes back to what you're talking about, is my stress level started to go higher and higher, and I didn't enjoy it. And then you'd literally, like, for 2 months I was talking about, "Oh, I'll get through this pandemic." And then I throw out 2 videos. He's mad. something's going on with him. That's exactly what you're talking. Now, I noticed that, you know, you do things a little different, but I'm not tied to a company either. Where, you know, you work with FreightWaves, they're going to rein you in, but I was freelancing it. And this is a huge flaw of mine that I've worked with really hard not to get too over the top. I've been guilty of going over the top too much, rein myself in, get calls from CEOs and just say, dude, man, and I'm repeating myself, but that's a good phone call to get, you know?
No, I mean, I like the over the top because the nod is right there. It's baked right in. Maybe that's why it's stuck in your head. So you walk into CDL school and there's people out here who are going to be listening who are curious about trucking, their consumer career in trucking. What preconceived notion did you have in trucking that you were completely wrong about and you learned very quickly as you went through school and got in a cab?
Yep, I thought that truckers didn't take showers. I thought truckers weren't smart. Let me tell you something. There are some owner ops, straight up owner ops. I was the lease purchased. And there are some owner ops that are true business men and women. You could even take Ingrid. I believe Ingrid was an owner op for a long time before she hopped into the office, I believe. And they are some of the smartest people out there to run there, to be profitable in the slightest of profit margins that you have. And then, you know, the biggest thing is like being unkept. Of course, people, you know, some are unkept, but you'd be surprised right now. They started this. They pushed it through the pandemic. Let's say I show up at a TA. It's so easy to do a shower now. They have an app. The TA does. So does all the other ones, Loves and everyone else. And I know for a fact that TA and Petro does because I use them the most. And you put in, I want a shower, and you pay for it. And if there's one not available, you just sit in your truck and you wait. And then hour 15 minutes later, boom. Hey, shower two is ready. You got 15 minutes to hop in there. So you're not waiting in line anymore. You're just sitting in your truck doing your thing, exercising. I mean, it's been a huge change.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big misconceptions, too, is one that you defy, right? And it's that truckers are not very tech savvy. They don't know how to use smartphones or anything, which could not be further from the truth. FaceTime is perfect for drivers. You mentioned all of these fuel stations have apps now, all these tracking apps drivers have to use, not to mention just that loneliness on the road, right? It's a great connectivity portal. Do you find trucking social media to be beneficial or toxic, though?
No, absolutely beneficial. There are some people out there on TikTok and Twitter that are absolutely killing it as a truck driver. Now, I've done a little bit different, like on TikTok. You never saw, I've done so much on trucking. I just wanted to dance around and be silly and do my thing. And that's what I've done. But there are people out there. One lady in particular, she's a Latino woman. She is killing it. Like 300,000 people. It's like almost 5 million views. And they're watching her. They're watching her do it. She's extremely tech savvy. And a lot of the guys out there are now showing continuously, just showing their dash cams. You got to be tech savvy for stuff like that.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, I when you started doing TikTok, I thought it was great. 50, you know, a truck driver in his 50s, and I know all the Zoomers, they love to overuse their word cringe. Oh, cringe, it's an adult dancing on our platform. We're coming for it. We're coming for it, Zoomers. Wayne is, and he's crushing it on there. So many drivers are, and what do you think the reason is that so many drivers have gravitated towards TikTok specifically, which, you know, for a while, a lot of people's misconception was it's just a bunch of teenagers dancing.
It did start out like that, but like anything too, to me, I just found it refreshing. There wasn't, now it is swinging a little bit the other way back to where I called it Angry Book. And, but TikTok was refreshing. You had people that were happy on there. Not a lot of arguing going on, especially during the pandemic. You get smiles watching people, not just truckers, just people being creative. And their algorithm is so good that, you know, if you start scrolling real fast through stuff, if you're not watching, or me, I watch a lot of cat and dog videos. It'll just show me quite a bit of dog and cat videos. I think it's healthy. I think it's great because it gives us something to do. And then I've always said, find a hobby. Especially when the pandemic was going on, you have to mentally stay in there. We're driving that truck. I think it's great mentally. It challenged me. It's like, what can I come up with next? And I think that part's pretty healthy, I think.
Now let's talk about the truck. So you go through CDL school, you get out of there. Are you intimidated to start driving? What was your first truck? Tell me about that experience. Bring me in.
Well, I was totally intimidated. And my first trainer was the one who actually taught me to be the trucker I am. His name was Arthur. The second guy I teamed with wouldn't take showers. So I learned the hard way there. He left me. He went home and left me at a McDonald's in his truck. And I like had no money. And he took his 2 or 3 days off. So the first one, he was the one that got me through it. I was not good at backing. I'm really, really, really good at backing. I've had quite a few companies say you're one of the better backers in getting that truck back in there, but I was horrible at it. And my trainer said, hey, you know, called up dispatch and said, we're going to be a day later if we can with the load. I'm going to spend 8-9 hours with Wayne. I'm going to rip his leg off doing the shifting, and we're going to teach him how to back that truck up. So yeah, he did that. I got better. He showed me different scenarios, but I was at first, the first month with him was pretty tough. But once I got going and I learned pretty quick, it became much better.
Have you been flatbed this whole time?
No. Nope. I've been going back. I've done almost all of it. I did, and I'll go very quickly. I've done about 300,000 miles flatbedding to 48 in Canada. I've done probably 400,000 dry van. I did a little bit of reefer, and I did 1 year intermodal.
Wow. So which do you like best?
I love flatbedding because I did the 48 in Canada as much as I love to travel. As far as fun goes, I thought the intermodal in Chicago could get kind of rough, but you'd get to learn all the ins and outs. And there's like 7 different intermodal places that I worked with, and you get to learn which way to go. Once you get that, you just pick up your load. You never go more than 300 miles away, come back up for a whole year. I took my reset in Chicago. I could take the tram down to downtown. So I kind of, to be honest with you, for a year, really, truly enjoyed intermodal the most.
It's got to be a good learning experience, too. I found that drivers who have done intermodal, they tend to understand, this is, you know, not all drivers, but the ones that, some that have, tend to understand the supply chain a little bit better, or the interconnectedness of the supply chain and how ports and rail yards and all of those things function in it. They're a little less enclosed within their own world, which is just, you know, highways and docks back and forth.
And it does teach you a lot, too. And you might be waiting for one. You know, it's like, hey, it's going to show up in 3 hours, or they're going to get it off in 3 hours. So, you know, you're talking to the dispatch and they're getting you to go where you need to go 300 miles away. Then you come back up. That's another thing, is that I had the longest relationship that I had during that time, because you're home more and you're not that far away. You get in between the routes there. And that part was pretty fun. But I just like the really not long drives, and you're really kind of close to the home base. And it was fun going to me. It was fun going into the place. There's another thing, too, that I really liked about it was the company that I worked for. They actually had a maintenance crew inside where they're unloading everything. And they would literally, like, every day check all the now you have your container that sits on the, and I forgot, it's been a while since, but they put it on where your trailer and your lights and everything. So they're checking your tires, you're checking your lights. Very rarely did I have lights out. How nice is that? Tires always good. That's a big deal for a truck driver when you can do your pre-trip and post-trip and have everything usually pretty good for you.
Speaking of those checks, so road check week was a couple weeks ago. You've been through many of those through your career. How did drivers feel about those? I know a lot take time off the road. Is it a big pain in the ass? Is it a big hassle? What were your thoughts on them?
To be honest with you, I hated them. Yeah. I don't like them. I think, and I'm going to sound like the old school truck driver, I think it's just a money-making issue. If they can't, the way I look at this is they should be able to do the road check every single day when we're out on the road. And I'm not quite sure why they feel 1 week of intense. And that's another thing, too, is I think it puts a burden. And I've heard you all talk on freightways. It takes a lot of truck drivers out. After my second one and getting pulled over, I just took myself out of the game. What benefit is that? I just didn't want to deal with it, knowing that I was going to get pulled into every way station. And then depending on the guy who may have gotten in an argument with his wife, yep, we're going to check your brakes right now because this is our week. I didn't like it at all. I think it just adds a burden. I think they should be able to do their job, you know, throughout the year. And, you know, I do think, though, I will say, because I had someone change my mind a little bit on it. If you look at some of the stuff that they catch on these things, especially lately down in Georgia, a lot of alcohol in these trucks. So there, it's not all like I don't like them. But then I have turned around a little bit and say, I couldn't believe how many people got caught with alcohol in their trucks, and that's a felony. So yeah, I mean, I just take, for me personally, I was always just taking myself right out of the game when that happened. That's another truck driver out of the system.
But I hear you. If you say that that's a problem, it's like telling someone you're going to give them a drug test in a month. Okay, Yeah, I'll bake. Yeah, I might be not clean all of the year, but because you told me it's in a month, you know, I'll top staking steroids or drugs or whatever it is that they're testing for. So it kind of defeats the entire purpose, especially when, you know, the FMC SA is you know, we're getting hard on drugs and alcohol. We have the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse database now. It's taking a lot of drivers out of service. What do you feel about that? Do you feel that's also more just regulatory BS? Or, again, is it a necessary evil because of some of the issues?
No, I don't mind a drug clearing place. I've passed every one of mine, including the hair testing. That thing, to me, just kept people, if I'm going to look at this honestly and not just go down a route where I think I can make up my own minds, the drug clearinghouse thing just kept a lot of drivers off that should not have been behind the wheel. So I think that's caught a lot. Now, like I was saying, though, they're catching more with some alcohol. And, you know, that's to me, you can't have it. You can't have it in there. But if you're doing hard drugs in the truck, or let's say you just have, and I'm just saying this, let's say you just have a six pack in your truck. You stop for the night. You drink your three or four beers, have the two left. You drive in the morning just like you were staying at home and take off. I do think there are subtle differences, but it's against the law. It's a felony. And to go back to the drug clearing place, I think if you look at them numbers, there are some people that were driving. They got off the road. And I think that's good that they got them off before they got in some horrific accident.
I mean, one of the misconceptions about drivers is that they're gearheads, they're meth heads, they're speed freaks. Is that true? Have you seen a lot of drugs when you were in your experience on the road? Was it mostly alcohol? What is that lifestyle like at the rest stop?
I've seen zero drugs and zero. And I think that's a huge misconception because I do think they're getting ahead of the game on the drugs. Now, alcohol, I just didn't see much of it either. But I did have just recently within this last year, this truck driver came in. I was down, Little Rock. And I think it was a Flying J down there. And he comes in and says, Where's your beer? You know, real loud. And they're like, well, there's a liquor store right around the corner there. And he's yelling, I want to go to the liquor store. That was the first time in my 8.5 years that I've heard, you know, a driver that vocal about trying to get something. So I think it's, in my opinion, I think it's a little bit overblown. And then they do these checks and catch people. But we are professional. Our numbers prove it. They did go up, by the way. Last 2 years, we've had more truck drivers die. And that's increasing. And that's a problem. But, you know, numbers don't lie. I'd rather look at the number in reality and say, I think we do pretty good. I think we do really good every single day out there. And I don't think that, you know, especially I just never ran into meth heads or drug heads out there. We're all pretty professional, in my opinion.
Now, you talk about safety, and flatbedders tend to be, they're like the grammar Nazis of trucking. Every time I share like an accident or an article about an accident that involves a flatbed, they're always the first to comment on the straps and the loading and the irresponsibility. They get very, very triggered by this because, they don't want more regulations, especially on the safe drivers. What do you need to know as a flatbedder, and why are flatbedders such sticklers for safety? I'm glad they are, by the way.
Oh, I tell you, that's funny that you asked that, because my trucker Wayne Craig Facebook page started out as a tutorial of how to be a better flatbedder. And I just gave up because any video I did, I mean, they're talking straps. I knew the law. Now, a lot of people overstrap. I've been checked. I've never gotten a ticket not having the right straps. I would usually, you know, do it exactly the way by law states. And, you know, I didn't have the suicide reactor, I think they called it. So you'd have to do two straps less than 4 feet away. And as soon as I put a video out there, I mean, I literally would have 100 comments saying how wrong I did it. And I could have went through an inspection and I'd still get that. So they are a different breed. I love doing it. I loved working with them. That's one of the last things where we all help each other out still. So that's a great place. But I just gave up on doing social media and with flatbedding because it was just like I spent more time going, you guys, it's legal.
No, they take it very seriously. I'm not even kidding. And if any of you out there, just go share a video like on trucking Twitter of an accident involving a flatbedder. They will come out of the woodwork and they will start criticizing everything about the freight. And you were just showing proper like handling and they're criticizing you there. But again, God bless them, because it's, you know, it's a very dangerous profession. Everybody's seen, like, I talked to a logger, this TikToking logger, and everyone in my generation who's a little bit younger who watched Final Destination 2, we all have, like, this premonition, this fear of all the logs flying off the back of a log truck and just smashing you through the face and causing, like, a horrific accident. Have you been in any accidents, or what's the hairiest situation you've been in while pulling a load?
You know, I haven't been in my record is clean. And there's been things where I've had people back into me a couple times. And I think you all saw that when I first got in. I may not have been linked up with you, but I had people hitting me and stuff like that. But I've never on the road been on an accident clean record. But some of the worst things that I've seen weren't like, I didn't see like a huge truck accident as far as happening. I saw a lot of the passenger cars right after it happened where we have to stop and make a call. Those are the worst ones sometimes to come across. I said the worst one I ever saw was on I-70. I was going towards Indianapolis for like a year and 2 months. Indianapolis was basically my home base when I was doing a GM run. And it was horrific. Two cars coming from different directions hit each other. And I don't want to get too gruesome, but there was like four or five people that were thrown out of the car and we're all stopping. And it was really bad. And those are the things that you just sit back. And for me, I was just like, okay, I got to stay even safer because I never wanted to be a part of an accident like that. And I never was, and I'm glad, but you see some ugly things out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a video that went viral, that horrific accident that happened a few months ago where you just saw the trucks just plowing through four-wheelers and each other going through trailers. And you're like, a lot of people died in that accident. It was horrible. And those kind of things mar public perception, right? They get an unnecessary and amplified fear of truck drivers. What do you think is the biggest misconception that the regular general public has about trucking and the safety of it?
Yeah, that was the accident in Dallas. And they had the ice going on there. And if you look at no one's saying the problem is that a truck, when you see the damage it can do, and that reminds me now, I saw a truck that didn't stop, thinking back to all the stuff you were asking me earlier, and he didn't stop for backed up traffic. And I was just north of Kansas City and three people died and he wiped out about five or six cars. But in that accident in Dallas, if you look at it, there were passenger cars that were doing. There were more passenger cars than there were trucks, but they go straight to the trucks, you know, and the truck driver and the damage that can do. That's why we're paid. But to be honest with you, a passenger car isn't paid to be a professional. We are. And there was a lot of people. I have driven the 48 and Canada three times winter in the Rockies, and I'm not getting in any accidents. So my whole thing was when that happened and I wrote about it was, what about some pre-trip on planning and the weather? People are saying, well, we didn't know it was happening. And if you look back at the weather back then, they said there was some possibilities of ice. Too many drivers, and we're professional, we get paid to look at the weather. So that perception is bad because there was a lot of trucks, so don't get me wrong, but I think it was 132 cars and trucks. And there were more cars. So that's just a misconception because they see the damage a truck does and, oh, it's all the truck driver's fault.
Yeah, I mean, it's ice, right? I mean, how are you going to stop? Now, granted, maybe I don't know the exact NTSB reports. I don't know if they were going too fast or what. It's hard to tell from the videos. You don't see the exact scale. But yeah, I mean, as a trucker, those kind of things, you don't want to see it because it creates even more fear. And that's why I find that a lot of drivers, contrary to public opinion, tend to be a lot more safety-focused and much bigger sticklers for safety than I think what the perception is. We talk about receiver perception. There's a shipper of choice has started to rise to prominence, and you hear more and more about it when capacity is very tight like it is now or like it was in 2018. You as an owner-operator, do you care if someone's a shipper of choice? What do you care when you are deciding to pick up and bring a load somewhere? What's your criteria?
Yeah, when I was doing it, I did worry about whether or not, you know, you got a shipper of choice usually means that they're pretty good at what they do. And I kind of got prominence on LinkedIn when I was at a place for 10 or 12 hours and it was already late and then it was even more late. And I was an owner op lease purchase and I was able to leave and say, okay, I don't want to go there anymore. Dooner, the biggest problem I believe we talked about a lot in the last 30 minutes or so, detention among truck drivers, one of the biggest reasons why drivers leave, because we have to roll. This is something where you have the shippers, receivers, trucking companies. And, you know, for you to sit there for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours waiting to get loaded, it plays with your mind. It upsets you. You get angry. You're like, oh, this is stupid. I don't want to do this anymore. And when we talk about keeping the best of the best, after my 8.5 years, some of the best drivers that I know, the ones that you want on the road for your family, ones I want to stay on the road, leave because of detention and how long they have to wait. And that's where the shipper choice comes in, because if they're good, I thought during coronavirus, if they were good, they got better. But the worst got way worse. And I've said that a couple times. Ooh.
Now, I know detention times because I work in this industry. You know detention times because you work in this industry. But for those who don't, for those who aren't drivers, how is it typical to be stuck for hours waiting to get your shipment unloaded?
It can be if you're a company driver and you're going. It really does depend on the trucking company and do they work with shippers that are notorious. Reefer, I did reefer for a little while and decided, hey, no way, I'm not waiting 8 hours. And some people, the reefer guys love it. They do their thing and the waiting doesn't bother them at all. But detention, if you don't really know what I'm talking about, most of the time they'll give you about 2 hours. That's kind of the norm. After 2 hours, they say, okay, we got to pay detention. Well, my whole thing is, and I've been saying this for a long time, we have to take the detention part of it. They're paying the company, the broker, whoever they pay. You go over 2 hours, I'm not seeing that in my pocket right away. I'm relying on the company to pay me detention. There's too many hands in the pot. I'm saying with all this stuff going on, how we're becoming more digital, if I'm an owner-operator, an owner-lease purchase, I go in, you hold me over 2 hours, I have a Venmo account. You can start Venmoing me or PayPal me money for you holding it. You tell me. Now, they're going to say, the shippers and receivers are going to say, well, we couldn't do that. We can't afford that. They want to negotiate. I want to see my money as a driver. I think that's one of the biggest things where if we could just start paying the drivers immediately, I'd be sitting here watching my Venmo go cha-ching, and then I wouldn't be all mad. And if they hold me for 5 hours, well, 3 hours of Venmo came in, and I'm like, all right, I know I got the money. I don't have to talk to anybody and say, well, they didn't pay it yet. I think we got to start thinking a little bit more intelligently of how can we make these shippers and receivers shippers of choice, and the ones that aren't shippers of choice, how can we make them a little bit more responsible?
Yeah, it's hard to go to bat for the shippers, though, who don't action any of this information. It's out there. There's surveys by companies like WorkHound. If you look at WorkHound, on driver sentiment, what drivers really care about, it's pretty easy to discern what their hierarchy of needs are when they come to your receiver. And they're pretty obvious, aren't they? Don't hold me in detention when I'm not getting paid. The other big one is transparency on pay. Drivers want to know how much money they're going to make each month. Now, granted, in trucking, you're not always going to know that, are you? Because you don't know how long you're going to be stuck at that dock. And you work in a business where it's more volatile than Dogecoin, right? The rates move up and down. So the onus too, and is this fair to say, a lot of truck drivers don't know their S, like they need to know their numbers, they need to know their business. And this comes out in mass every time the market tanks and bottoms out, all of a sudden everyone's got pitchforked for the brokers. When right now would be a great time with capacity strain to build some of those relationships, right? Maybe not cancel all of those loads that you said you were going to take and find some really good shipping partners. Is there a lot of value in that? You've been in this business for a while.
Oh, there is. And I go back and hearing you say that, you talked to Ingrid about that. She was really, she ran through, remember the conversations he had with Ingrid about running through the pandemic, and she built those relationships up. And that's what people have to do right now, because it's going to tank again. But I do think though, the people that have seen this go up and down over the years and think they know what's coming, I think because of coronavirus, we're going into a whole new territory here. You need to build it up. It's like perfect time. I just saw a load today on LinkedIn. They were offering, I think it was $4.75 a mile. That's not going to stay there. But then again, I have talked over and over again. Now, people are going to argue with me, but I was sitting at an empty C1 school in Indianapolis talking about, are you as a CEO, I talked to the CEOs, are you thinking a year from now, 7, 8, 9 months from now, when this starts to filter out, drivers are leaving, we don't have this long stream of students coming in, and now we're bearing the burden of that right now with our industry, and we're paying the price because all these people have left, and that stream of drivers weren't coming back in. If you're driving right now, and I'm not, but my thing is, like, build those relationships up, get on the lanes that you want, get on the lanes that you absolutely love to work with, shipper of choice, and I think you'll do okay. But from what I heard, now that I've been out for the truck for 3 months, from what I heard, though, you could basically, almost anybody could do this type of environment and make money now. But you need to get ready for when it's not like that.
Yeah. You know what? And the one warning I would put out there is, you know, you see these great rates, right? And you want to jump in. But there's something going on this year that's going to make it a little bit more challenging. And that is the echoes of the decisions that were made last year by many, many different companies. This isn't to put the blame on anybody. This is how businesses operate. Semiconductors, production of those got cut because people thought they'd be selling less computers and less cars and all these things. Auto production got cut down. Rental car companies, go try to rent a car. They sold a bunch of their fleets. Now they can't buy them back. Go try to find a used car. Go try to find a used truck. Go order a truck. All this stuff is backlogged. Equipment is very hard to come by. So, yeah, great that you can find that you're going to get paid more money, but you're also going to be spending more money, not just on equipment, but also finding talent. Because the other thing that happened is the people supply chain, those CDL schools, a lot of those closed during the pandemic, too. And we're not luring people back in fast enough into the trucking industry. We're just not. Why do you think that is, though? What is trucking need to do to appeal to younger people or people like you who are in a transitionary period in their career between 28 and 35, and they're like, you know what? I got to make my next big change and run with it. Trucking seems like a great profession for that.
It is, and I don't think we're doing a good enough time. I'm one of those people that I could have joined the military at 18 or 19, and I didn't. And a lot of people push back at the 18 to 20-year-olds driving intrastate or interstate. And I think we need to start getting them at 18 or 19. And I also believe, because there was a nursing shortage way back when, I'm showing my age, but I think we need to start giving bonuses separate. I'm talking about everybody's been bailed out, and we need drivers. I think there needs to be like a $10,000 governmental supplement saying, if you become a driver, you know, you get $10,000 in your first 6 months and break it up and say, and keep the trucking companies out of it and say, we need drivers, talk to them and just basically say, we need you. We want you. And it's you're hearing more and more of that in the country where it's a real something's going on. And people would argue with me. They're saying we don't have a driver shortage. We have a talent shortage. And okay. That's, to me, that's kind of
semantics. People get so argumentative over that. That's like one of those, like the straps on the flatbed. It's one of those stupid things. It's not a driver shortage. It's just a pay thing. And it's like, well, either way, there's not enough drivers for the trucks that we need now. Right.
And I was arguing with someone on LinkedIn and said, well, okay, if it's just pay tankers, they're now by average, 10 to 15% before pandemic, they were short drivers. Now it's 25%. And you get in those specialized tankers, they can make close to $100,000 a year. Oh, that's a lot. Why are they short? There's a middle here that, you know, we always argue this point or that point. The point is we don't have enough drivers. Plus, I do think that we have an image problem and nobody is even talking about it. I've tried to some extent, but then it turns into a fight. And for me, just doing it myself, Dooner, it just wears on me. Like we said early on, it just makes it not fun anymore to have all these people arguing with you when you're really just trying to say, hey, we kind of need drivers.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. You know, I put out on Twitter, ask a truck driver, right? And some truckers responded, some regular people responded. They wanted some myths demystified. I'm going to go through some of these questions. We'll see what you got for them. Taylor Barker says, why do truckers park at the fuel island?
Oh, I hate it. And it's so funny. I saw that on there. And let me tell you something. That's a whole nother reason why truckers, good truckers get out. Because the fuel companies don't want to deal with these really upset drivers that are parking. When I got into the owner-op lease purchase because I could choose where I could fuel up. I made a conscious choice. I was good with money. I went to places that I knew weren't as full. Everyone has the same system they're using, and they send everybody to the Flying J or Love's, and you're waiting for an hour to get it, and then someone parks there. And I just took that out of the equation. I don't know why they do it. I do think it's the turnover issue. People don't care. They know, oh, I'm not going to be in here more than a year. Oh, I can tell you, that person that wrote that, spot on.
I can't stand people who, like, they have no conception of the ripples, like, of the wake that they make. They could care less about any of that stuff. They could give a flying J about parking at the fuel island. That's a question we're not going to be able to answer, right? Sorry, Taylor, we don't know. You're a driver too, Taylor, because people are selfish, right? People are selfish, they're inconsiderate, and they're stupid, and we all wish they would get towed, right?
But you can take yourself out of that equation. I've learned that at 54. I didn't have to deal with them anymore because I paid a little bit more in fuel, even though it was my biggest cost. And I saved in other areas to go places that I didn't have to wait an hour for and then have to argue with someone parking.
People are just fascinated by the fact that you can maneuver a vehicle that's so big, park into a dock, find parking and all that. The nerd girl asked, do you ever get nervous trying to park or dock that thing? Now, you mentioned when you first started out, yes, of course you were intimidated. Did that go away? Did you get really good? Did it not bother you?
No, not for the most part, except for during Christmas this last time. On the day after Christmas, I was in Jersey. Anytime I looked at New York across the bay there, I was in a really tight spot there, but luckily there weren't much going on. So yeah, if it was a tough spot, I wanted to make sure it was perfect. I don't get nervous. I basically, now that I had that many years and just figured out, okay, don't get nervous. Just worry about not hitting anything and kind of looking it over, trying to figure out how I'm going to back it up. But anybody who's been in there as long as I have basically backed it into some crazy spot. So you just get over that. Oh, you're just looking at it going, ah, here we go. Another crazy one.
I didn't hit it. I tapped it. There's a difference, right?
There is a difference. Absolutely.
Well, okay. Geo Piston. He asks, what's the most oh, this is a good question. What's the most courteous thing four wheelers can do for drivers while on the road?
I think I'll get a lot of people agreeing with this. It's getting on and off the off ramps or getting on the highway. You know what? I got to worry about Uncle Joe flying up here 90 miles an hour in the left lane. I got to worry about Aunt Karen that's trying really hard and thinks that it's my job to get out of her way to get on, and she is slowing down. I'm not sure what she's doing. I've got to worry about the person right behind me getting on the highway. It's not our job to do whatever you think I should have to do. My job is to worry about the five other cars and to worry about Grandma Karen over there that's deciding that she wants to somehow, you know, worry about me and slowing down and getting mad and flipping me off. Or I've got other things I got to worry about. Getting on the highway, man, just do it right.
Know your car's speed and acceleration and get the hell up to speed if you see a truck coming, or wait, right? Don't try and go in there at 30 miles an hour. You're going to cause a lot of problems. You could kill yourself. You could hurt a driver. You could hit all the people behind him as well.
But here's what happens. I'm going to cut off Uncle Joe, who's going 90 in a 70. So yeah. I cut Uncle Joe off to let Grandma Karen come in there, or Bob, Grandpa Bob. That guy in the left lane doesn't want to be held up. So what does he do? He scoots to the right lane and does the exact same thing to the person in even a more dangerous situation. And he's going way faster. There's no way around it. It's just get on the right way. Do it right.
Poor Karen. Here's just a little aside. According to the Census Bureau, in 2020, there were the fewest number of Karens born in over 200 years. I think as long as they've been tracking it. So that's sort of negative Karen propaganda. It got to some parents when they were naming it.
Well, I realize saying it that I'm sorry to the Karen. it's just something we say. And you noticed I said Bob. I had to put that in there.
Ben Van Zee, he works at a factoring company and says that most of the time he's explaining to drivers what double brokered loads are and how to get paid on them. Are most drivers in the dark on this?
Yeah, because I am for the most part, too. I've kind of like tried to specialize on certain things and double brokering. I mean, I've listened to shows on that. I'm confused still to this day what a double broker load is. And it's a tough concept for me to understand. So I'm not definitely, and I say it's a weak spot of mine, and it is, but it's a big deal from everybody talking about it.
Well, it's also one of those things, you're on the road, you don't always have time to deal with this thing. It's moving on someone else. You're like, I got to get this thing delivered. You got to worry about it later. Then it ends up on that factoring guy's desk, and that's where all that murkiness and that confusion about pay and those things that make drivers want to leave the cab start happening.
You know, being a true owner-op, you'd probably have to know way more than a lease purchase, and any owner-op would know that listening.
Yeah. Miles J. Vargas, he asks, are you really on the lookout for folks asking you to honk your horn, so doing this thing, and does it annoy you?
It doesn't ever annoy me. I've done it a few times, but here's the thing. When the kids do it, you can't turn a kid down. Now, I will say, though, I look around because some of those horns are loud. So they want
to scare somebody, right?
You can. And early on, I used to do it all the time. And then you see the reaction of literally, this is like, the person thinks they're going to get hit and they make some crazy move. But yeah, the kids going by, if I look around, it's pretty safe. You have to blow them for the kids and they love it. And that's just me, you know, any truck driver, like, we got to smile. That's a big deal these days.
Bart Van Winkle, he asks, what percent, and this is a thing that's come up a few times. Bart Van Winkle asks, what percentage of truckers carry a gun to defend themselves? And as they have to pull into some shady places to sleep. So he wants to know if a lot of drivers carry guns. Most driving interstate probably wouldn't, right?
Yeah, nobody's going to admit it one way or the other. And I would never admit it on television anyways because of all the different laws, you know, going from state to state. And it is, and this has been a big deal, and they just don't want to deal with a lot of the trucking issues because they've tried to get national laws saying we should be able to carry from any state, you know, back and forth, and it just hasn't been able to pass yet. My feeling is on this, because my feeling is a lot of people do, and they have to do what they got to do, and that goes to one of the five things, and I talked a lot about it, was truck parking. We don't have enough truck parking. They're not dealing with it. And so, you know, a lot of these drivers are going to be packing when they have to go to a place that's kind of shady. But, you know, admitting anyone, you're never going to get anyone to say they actually are, because it is just like having alcohol in your truck, having a firearm in a state you're not licensed in could be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, no, no, exactly. It's one of those things, like, some may, but they would never admit it.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, well, this is a controversial one. Lot lizards, real thing? Do people partake of the forbidden fruit?
No, because what happened is over the last 8.5 years, only twice in my career have I had someone knock on my door that wanted something. But it's becoming more and more prevalent with the human trafficking. So if you're a driver and getting a lot lizard, you are literally out there asking for trouble. You are literally, you know, maybe that's part of the human trafficking. And enough truck drivers like me know. Both of the times I had them knock on my door, I called 911 and said, hey, there's someone, you know, walking around here, because you don't know if that person was sent from somebody else. So I mean, I was there just like everybody else. I just don't see the lot lizard. I think that's, and they're there, and it's happening because human trafficking, they say, is going up. But I didn't really run into it all as much as I think people thought or think it's going on.
Yeah, I have to have Truckers Against Trafficking on this format show. They've been on What the Truck before. I get to get them on this format show to shine a light on that. Lot lizard, fun, weird, controversial word, but it also speaks to and it sort of minimizes a very negative aspect of what happens there, and that is that human trafficking, a lot of those people have no control over being in that lot. It's not of their own volition. They're controlled by a pimp or an addiction or mental illness. There's a lot of issues that go on in this that are beyond people's control.
Absolutely. You nailed it on that one.
So Steve DeWeese, he says, how is it possible to steer a truck, drink a cup of coffee, smoke a cigarette, eat a sandwich, shift gears, listen to XM, talk on CB, check seat covers, and avoid idiots all at the same time? How do you multitask?
Oh, man. Now, it's too funny. I'm not quite sure what answer he's looking for. But I gave up sodas and caffeine and all that. So I do 1 5-hour energy in my drink. I paid attention. I tried not to eat too much behind the wheel. That's been there were times I just had an apple or something. And I tried not to eat the dinner behind the wheel, but we do have a lot to worry about, but that's why they pay us. But anytime you do something like eat a burger and maybe have something fall, it can turn into a big deal. But I had someone tell me one time, never should you eat. And I ate apples, bananas, and stuff like that. Just, I paid more attention. If there were no, I could see, I got eyes. And if there's not stuff around, I'd break open the banana and eat it. I tried not, you know, you're in a lot of traffic. I tried to avoid all the things that he was saying.
Well, don't throw the banana out the window. It'll be like Mario Kart. There'll be cars spinning everywhere.
Exactly.
Wayne, we're pulling into the receiver right now. We got to dock the truck. You're hopping back on the bike. You're getting out of that hotel. Where is the Highway to Health going to lead you next?
Absolutely. US 2 West is going to be my home until I get to Seattle. So I'm going to be for 250 miles. I'm going to be in Minnesota. And looking forward to it tomorrow. I hop off and do another 40-mile journey. I've been 40 to 50 miles every day now and getting in shape and trying to get slim and trim.
You getting back in the truck ever, or is this it?
Well, I was hoping to give you some news today on this thing, but there's something out there that's great news. I may, when I get to Seattle, depending, I may try to head down to San Diego for some really good news. And my son will not let me say what's great about it. So if I make it to Seattle and I'm still not doing it, yeah, I'll probably hop back in or maybe even try the office part.
So people who want to follow you, they want to connect with you after this and maybe get that news on social media, where do I send them?
Absolutely. I got too many to mention. I'll mention the top ones. If you just want fun, it's TikTok at Wayne_Craig. I have a Trucker Wayne /Wayne Craig Facebook page. I also have a Wayne Craig Photography Facebook. The biggest thing is I'm going to start filtering everything through there is my WayneCraigPhotography.com. And I'm going to start doing updates, leading everybody into the website to talk about my daily grind here out on the road.
And if you want to find this show, just look up FreightWaves Insiders wherever you get your podcasts. You can hear this on demand. Download the FreightWaves TV app. You can watch our beautiful faces because this is on video now. You can also catch What the Truck, which is Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at noon Eastern time. You want all the news about the shows I produce? Subscribe to the What the Truck newsletter, FreightWaves.com/WTT. Find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. Hey, Wayne, audience, truck drivers, the curious, thank you for letting us inside your world today.
Thanks for having me on.